Don't look now, but the holidays are going to sneak up fast. But it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you cannot find anywhere else. The website is packed with high-quality, unique gifts that are often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists, and because they're made in small batches, the best finds can sell out fast. For example, you know those plastic baseball helmets that you can put ice cream in? They actually make those in ceramic. So they're not just cheesy plastic throwaways. They're a more permanent bowl. Ooh, who doesn't want baseball helmet ice cream? Nom, nom, nom. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. From moms and dads, history buffs, diehard football fans, or mixologists, you'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you will not find anywhere else. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/Zabe. That's uncommongoods.com/Zabe for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. Did you know that your calendar age does not always match how old your body truly is? Your biological age and the age of your cells and organs is the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases. That's why I ordered the True Age test from True Diagnostic. With just a simple at-home finger prick, you can uncover your true biological age and get personalized insights. No doctor visits, no labs. Look, I'll be honest. When I learned that if your biological age is just 5 years older than your actual age, your disease risk can jump 30 to 50%. I got a little bit nervous. I mean, I'm the guy who thinks ketchup counts as a vegetable. But up to 90% of biological aging is driven by lifestyle. The way we eat, move, sleep, and manage stress has a massive impact on how fast our bodies age. True Diagnostic gives you a personalized report with science-backed steps to actually slow down aging. I'm kind of dreading what my results might say, but I am curious. Maybe this will finally be the wake-up call that gets me and you back on track. The test is super easy. Send in your sample using the prepaid mailer, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you get your detailed report. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to TrueDiagnostic.com and use my code ZABE to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. TrueDiagnostic.com, promo code ZABE at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
It's your job. I give you money.
You never say thank you.
That's what the money is for.
That's crazy. It would have been on a talk radio show like Sports Chat or Sportzilla and the Jabberjaw.
Third down and two. Wentz throws on the move. Got Hawkinson. Touchdown.
Receiver lost possession. Yeah. Hit the ground.
Yeah, good call there by Mike.
We are living in a hellscape of officiating, and I cannot tell you people who still like replay how much I loathe your existence. And on that happy note, I say hello and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the ZabeCast, October 21st, 2025. Thank you for joining me. It's you and I today, and I've got all NFL in this podcast. I hope that's okay. We'll get to other things tomorrow and on Thursday and then Friday, but for now, there's too much in the NFL to get to, including that play from last Sunday's game between the Vikings and the Eagles. No, it would not have changed most likely the outcome of the contest. The Vikings were down 9. There was, I think, 3 minutes and 5 seconds left. I had to go find that clip, oh, by the way, because they don't just let people put it out there. The NFL is now in the business of closely keeping their arms around what content does and does not get out into easily accessible venues, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, etc. So I remembered, I'm like, you know, I subscribe to this NFL Game Pass or NFL Plus, which is $99 a year. That gives me the condensed versions of all the games, including the full TV copy if you want that. It's not a bad subscription for $100, better than Red Zone. We'll get to that in a second. And I don't use it as much as I should. So I'm like, hold on, let me log into that. I bet they have the play on there. And that's where I found it from. But this is now the hellscape we're living in. And I blame you people. And by you people, I mean you replay people. You are the worst. I hate what you have encouraged sports to do. To use technology to get things right, which has always been, as my boy Solly once said, overrated. Getting it right is overrated. Not something that is insignificant. You should always try to get it right. But to put getting it right at the top of the sports pyramid of values has always been the wrongest thing you could do. What you replay people have done now is you've made a joyful, simple thing known as sports, and you have turned it into a disfigured hall of mirrors and stupid arguments. And was he in or was he out? Was the ball moving? He didn't gain the line. Every touchdown now is a, well, maybe that's a touchdown. Even when there is not even a flag, you never know. Because the invisible hand of God, known as New York, and the expedited review guy may reach down from the heavens and grasp your joy and strangle it in front of your eyes. The moment has been sacrificed to nitpicking, oh, we've got to get it right. So the Hockenson TD catch was a catch by any reasonable person's standard. By any gross measure, it was a catch. By any interpretation, it was a catch. Much like Dez Bryant when he famously caught the ball in Green Bay. No one in their right mind thought, hey, that's not a catch. It's now been defined in four or five paragraphs of surviving the ground, maintaining possession. Ball can hit, but it can't hit. It's nonsense. It was once easy. Did the ball hit the ground? That's all it was. Is it? If it didn't, it's a catch. Not did the ball graze the ground or brush the ground or touch the ground while in the arms of a receiver. It was a judgment call, like everything else, holding, pass interference, you name it. Was it a catch? And it was never controversial until we started to slow it down and try to define everything and include concepts like survive the ground. It's so effing tiring. Oh no, we got to get it right, they say, or as perfectly right as possible, and we'll use any number of cameras and any number of angles to pursue this folly of getting it right. The joy and the wonder of sports is supposed to be about an athlete like Hockenson laying out in full flight, 6'5", 248 pounds of muscle to grab a well-placed pigskin missile. That's the joy and wonder, not the, well, you know, technically, this one angle, 240 frames per second slow motion. Oh, oh, see right there? The ball sort of bobbled. And it came out. Luckily, we had the 300-millimeter focal length to shoot it from the other sideline because, well, that's an angle that really shows him not catching the ball. It's just so infuriating. This comes a week after the whole illegal motion penalty on Jared Goff and the Lions. And I understand that the rule, as it's written, says if you're anywhere near the center, then if you then split out as a receiver, that you must come to a full stop before the play begins. And so in that regard, it technically was a correct call. But here's the thing. It took a minute and 20 seconds after the play was over. And it starts to beg the question of, so are we only going to have expedited review, reach down from the heavens and go, whoa, 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 hold on a second. on a pass that's a touchdown, or will they do it on a technicality at midfield on a 2-yard gain on 2nd and 6? Nobody knows. And somebody points out, why is it that we still have reviews and challenges? What's the point with this expedited hand of God, New York reaching down? All of it is so dumb. We're supposed to be brought out of our seats with, oh my God, look at that catch. Nobody gets brought out of their seats to say, well, that was technically not a catch, and I'm glad that they fixed it, because fixing it is the most important thing. Here's Hockenson after the game being asked by reporters. So what did you think?
I know they were talking about your touchdown that was overturned, but even the look on your face when you were watching the replay, just how incredulous it was even watching it secondhand. What are your feelings on that?
I mean, there's nothing to overturn it. I was out there. I felt it. I mean, hands under the ball, snag it. I don't understand. I don't obviously understand the catch rule at this point. Jay had one like the exact same thing last year in the corner of the end zone. So they got to figure it out. It's, you know, New York can't call in and say that it's not a catch when every other ref out there says it is.
Yeah, and there's where we're at. We are in hell right now. Those of us, when I say we, that understand the folly of replay. The rest of you, oh yeah, I'm looking at you. I can't stand you. You don't get it. I hate every single one of you idiots who still support this nonsense. And I pity you that you cannot see the wisdom of my stance and others on the hashtag death to replay. And the solution is to fire each and every one of these replay booths into the off the edge of Niagara Falls to their imminent death. And I know, they don't even go to the sideline peep show anymore. You people who still support this are fools, and you have helped ruin sports as we once knew them. You cannot be reasoned with. You will never understand. You don't deserve to even watch these games that you have ruined for the rest of us. I think it's safe to say nobody is happy with replay right now, even those who have said, well, you know, we just like it. It's just we need to get it better. It's the midwit who insists, well, we just got to keep tweaking it. We'll add another challenge. We'll let coaches do this. We'll get another set of eyes in the booth. Blah, blah, blah. Where does it end? It ends with the league rigging games. That's where it ends. Replay is just like socialism to a liberal. It's such a wonderful idea that no matter how many times and places and countries where it has been tried and failed or led to misery or imploded economies and more, the midwit will always say, well, yeah, but true socialism has never been tried or executed. The goalposts always move, and they only move in one direction, backwards. Same with replay. Perfect does not exist. Only in theory can you have perfect replay, and it will never happen. I hate it. I hate every one of you who still thinks it's good. It is not. It's a disgusting farce, and it's only getting worse. I wish we could just go our separate ways peacefully. You guys who like replay, you go live in your fucked up, dumb world of sports. And the rest of us will go back to what it was like years ago when games were played, calls were made. Some were good, some were bad. Them's the breaks. The games were not to see who lives or dies. They were just for fun and entertainment. End of rant. We move on. Game of the year, Giants lose to the Broncos by giving up 33 in the fourth quarter after shutting out Denver for the first 45 minutes of the game. Incredible. To look at that box score, 0-0-0-33. And they did it in the most spectacular fashion on multiple fronts. They squandered an 18-point lead in the final 5 minutes. Teams had been something like 1,652-0 in that situation. Now they're whatever the number is and one. They did it with a kicker named Jude McAtomney from Derry, Northern Ireland. Oh, yeah, you mean his parents were from there, like three generations, or his grandparents, right? Third generation. No. No, that's where he was born and raised. He ended up playing and kicking in college at Rutgers, and before that, old Jude McAtomney kicked at Chowan University. Chowan. He was undrafted, part of the NFL's international kickers, whatever they call it. The international, what is the name of this program? It's to try to find kickers from all over the world. Now, look, the NFL's had success with Aussie punters that are Aussie rules football players and or rugby players that really know how to boot the shit out of the ball. But these kickers that they're getting in the international program, they may know how to technically kick a football so it goes through the uprights, but they're not of the mindset of an American kid who's dreamed of being the next Adam Vinatieri or Lou the Toe Groza or Tom Dempsey or Mark Mosley. Could you pick some older kickers? I'm trying to empty the clip on old kickers. Anyway, poor Jude McAtomney from Derry, Northern Ireland, missed not one but two extra points, including the extra point that would have given the Giants at least a three-point cushion in the final 33 seconds of the game. Kid was undrafted. He was wearing number 99. What'd you fucking think was going to happen? So even with that, the Giants up two. They've almost given up the game by allowing the Broncos to score 30 in the fourth quarter. They just need a stop. So they kick off, and Denver's pinned at their own 23. There's 33 seconds left. The Giants rushed three guys on first down. Bo Nix with plenty of time and plenty of room to roam in an ample-sized pocket, the size of the state of Colorado itself, hit Marvin Mims for 29 right down the middle. I took a screen grab. There was five Giant players covering two Denver receivers, and they still couldn't deflect the pass. A lot of guys were guarding just empty space. Someone was left as a spy to stop Bo Nix from scrambling. Let him fucking scramble. There's only 33 seconds there at their own 23. Let him get 15 yards and burn off who knows how many seconds of the clock. They had no timeouts left, Denver didn't. So, sure, let Bo Nix run up the middle. Who fucking cares? Burns was late getting back on sides, and they got a five-yard penalty after that. And here's the thing. The Giants had a timeout. So the Giants could have called a timeout, seeing that Brian Burns was way off sides. He had hurt his ankle, and he was late getting back. But no. Dipshit Brian Daboll, who's been yelling at medical personnel this year, didn't think like, hey, you know what? We're going to get a penalty for this. Boom, timeout. Didn't call one. The call made by coordinator Shane Bowen ripped in New York media. The hardest for the defense to stomach was that decision because not only did they only rush three, but they had Pro Bowler and first-round pick. They had Pro Bowler Dexter Lawrence and first-round pick Abdul Carter on the bench. Ryan Dunleavy, writing for the New York Post, said, in over-dramatized terms, the Giants left their season up to Nick Jones and Bo Braid over Dexter Lawrence and Abdul Carter. Barstool had a better headline, which is, the Giants ripped their fans out. The Giants ripped their fans' hearts out. Somehow shove them back in, rip them out again, put them in a blender, eat them, shit them out, and then piss all over the shit. It's the rushing three that is the coward's penalty. God and the football gods hate a coward. There is no reason Whenever you have a Hail Mary, blitz it. Rush five guys. Don't give the quarterback time to even set up. And in this case, it's not quite a Hail Mary, but still, rush five guys. You still have six in coverage. That is more than enough. We only get beat over the top for a touchdown. Just have two deep safeties. For God's sakes. You watch the all 22 of that play, you'll pull your hair out if you're a Giant fan. And then there was this regarding the game. Afterwards, Broncos linebacker Drake Greenlaw, who just got back from an injury, was suspended without pay for a game because of conduct following the game. He apparently chased referee Brad Allen down into the tunnel and screamed profanities at him. Brad Allen, who, by the way, is a doppelganger for our guy Paul Charchian. If you ever see the two pictures side by side, you'll know. The best tweet on this was, though, it also means that Brad Allen is a real-life, grown-ass man tattletale. Sad. Yeah, because nobody would have known if he didn't go ahead and complain, cry to his bosses, he came after me and said mean things. Of course, this was stemming from a horrible PI call that was on the Broncos that set up the Giants for what was the go-ahead touchdown late in the game, in which the Broncos defender clearly turned his head around, was clearly playing the ball, yes, got tangled up with the receiver, but the receiver was draped all over the defender's back, and they called PI. Sean Payton, who has some history with dicey PI calls costing them games, went ballistic, ran 50 yards down the sideline, came out on the field, and got a 15-yard penalty himself. Nuts. What a game. On to the Packer win. Matt LaFleur, after the game, was asked about, so you had a 4th-and-2 late, trailing by 3 on the plus side of the field, and you were going to kick a field goal, but then you pulled the team off the field, and you went for it, and you converted. Nice play by Jordan Love, by the way, to hit Tucker Kraft, his best, most reliable set of hands on an out pattern. And afterwards, Matt LaFleur said, well, you know, scared money don't make money. And some of the media just ate it up. Well, wait a minute. But you were scared. You had the field goal team out there. What happened? Well, LaFleur said that when he saw Jordan Love's face coming off the field and was so dejected, maybe even disgusted that they wouldn't allow him to go for it, he changed his mind. Now, it cost a precious timeout in the process, which is idiotic given it's a close game. It's a 3-point game. You never know where you might need that 40-second time coupon, but Matt LaFleur is known for not understanding at all the value or purpose of second-half timeouts. So LaFleur was scared and then made a decision based on a facial expression? Like, that's good coaching? That's part of the problem with LaFleur and his game management. You should never make decisions based on emotions or facial expressions or what you ate for lunch. It should be on all the metrics, down and distance, time left in the game, score, strengths and weaknesses, probability, timeouts left, you name it. None of this, well, he looked sad, so I sent him back out there. Lucas Havrasek, who is not from Derry, Ireland, but was looking for a job as a part-time teacher because he couldn't make it in the NFL as a kicker, called up by the Packers because Brandon McManus is hurt, and nailed a 61-yarder inside University of Phoenix Stadium, which is a Packers team record. Packers team record, 61-yarder. Guys are hitting field goals from stupid long range this year, and they say it's because they're giving the equipment guys a full week with the K-balls to help, you know, treat them up, rub them up, scuff them up, overinflate them. Who knows? Had a good discussion with my boy One Account on the golf course about these long field goals, and he said, I don't know, I think there's something else going on. I don't buy the story that it's just all about the K-balls being given to the equipment managers for the full week instead of 24, or not even 24 hours, given to them like 4 hours before game time to break in. I just think the state of the art of kicking is getting better. Even guys who are looking for part-time work as a substitute teacher like Lucas Havrasek. By the way, Micah Parsons was asked, do you know this guy's name, your kicker? He goes, no, but in fairness, I just got here. I still don't know half the team. bad for the Cardinals, by the way, that their offense is running better under Jacoby Brissett than it does under Kyler Murray, their franchise guy they gave all that money to, Mr. Call of Duty. They're averaging almost 100 more yards per game and about 10 more points per game, but short sample size, who knows? Maybe it's nothing. Packers are now 4-1-1. They're not a great team. They're not winning in convincing fashion. Their four wins have all come with 27 points. That's their magic number. But guess what? Win now, be good later. You don't have to be good until January, and it's tough to say how you're going to be until you get there. Any Packer fan ripping the team for not winning more easily, for looking lackluster at times, hey, this is like a golfer. You ever play golf and you scrape out, you know, four or five pars to start the round? They're not pretty. They're up and downs. They're a little bit lucky you make a long putt. Doesn't matter. They're pars. Make the pars now. Get your game together later. But don't make bogeys early. The Commanders confirmed on Monday they've lost defensive end Durant Armstrong for the rest of the season with a knee injury. That's terrible. Jaden Daniels, not sure if it's a knee or a hamstring at this point that knocked him out of the game against the Cowboys. They are 9.5-point underdogs in prime time to the Chiefs at Arrowhead. I will give Dan Quinn credit, though, prior to this game against the Cowboys, saying, look, I know we didn't have our three top receivers, but we're not going to blame this loss on injuries. This is on me. This is on the team. We got to be better. Good for Quinn in saying that.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
My favorite tweet off of this was from a guy named Rio Robinson on Twitter about the Commanders. Quote, "We gonna be straight, y'all. It's the Chiefs on Monday Night Football next week, then the Seahawks on Sunday Night Football, then the Lions on America's Game of the Week. We wanted the bright lights," tweets Rio Robinson. "Bright lights want a refund." Well said. The Falcons lost to the Niners in their game at Santa Clara on Sunday night. They had a 4th-and-1, down 3, 8 minutes and change left. They went for it. Okay, fine. But they went for it out of shotgun without their best running back in the backfield. Ridiculous. Atlanta threw the ball. Michael Penix Jr. tried to throw it for Drake London. It was instead knocked down by Chase Lucas. Bijan Robinson nowhere in the backfield. Was he on the field or was he just not in the backfield? No, Bijan was on the sidelines. Boy, these genius coaches. It's 4th-and-1. I think Bijan's, even if you're not expecting him to break a big one, he'll find a yard. They come up with all these excuses and run it under center. Can we please get back to quarterbacks that know how to run it under center? In that game, Christian McCaffrey was amazing. 24 carries for 129 yards, 2 touchdowns. Let me revise that. Christian McCaffrey was Christian McCaffrey. He was not amazing. This is what he does. I mean, he is in the pantheon of modern NFL running backs, where the league is not for them anymore, and injuries often curtail their productivity. He has been one of the best modern running backs, two-way guys ever, approaching Marshall Faulk-like status as a two-way back, both receiving and running. Even though I'd say that Faulk was a bit more durable, I don't have their side-by-sides of their, you know, career grids, but it's getting close. Optostats said that McCaffrey had more rushing yards than all others on both teams combined. He led all players in that game on both teams in receiving yards, and he scored more points than the entire opposing team. No other NFL player in the Super Bowl era has done all that in the same game. Oh, and it was a huge win for one Mac Jones. Mac Jones, with another win, earned a cool $400,000 incentive for his fourth win. That's $100,000 per, and he's going to rack up cha-ching, 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 $100,000 more going forward with every win he has after this. No word yet on when Brock Purdy could be back, but Mac Jones in this system for the Niners is thriving.
Matt threw it right to the guy, so it wasn't like he made a good play. I mean, good for him. He caught it. Like, awesome.
Speaking of the Niners system and Shanny Jr., I once was quite critical of Shanny Jr. just because he was a bit of a Nepo baby. But sometimes the Nepo babies are really good, and they really grind, and they thrive, and they're worthy of being a great NFL head coach, even though they got their start thanks to their dad. That's the case with Shanahan Jr., or Kyle, as they call him. Kurt Benkert, former third stringer for the Green Bay Packers, and is not apologetic about it. He leans into that whole thing. I like Kurt. Kurt, not Kirk. Funny how that was with the Redskins, that Bruce Allen called him Kurt all the time. Instead of Kirk Cousins. Kurt Benkert with a T. I like him. I've reached out to him to say, hey, I'd love to have you on to talk to you. He's not responded, so I just assume that he hates me. He should know who I am from when I was on in Milwaukee and whatnot. But that notwithstanding, Kurt Benkert was briefly with the Niners and was there to see Shanahan up close. And Benkert wrote this about Shanny Jr. Quote, someone asked me what stuck out the most about Shanahan to you in regards to my time with the Niners. Here's my response, he said. He's a learner, and his willingness to accept that he doesn't have all the answers was glaring. He also would go to the ends of the earth each week to find the answers for that week's game plan. With him, whether you agreed with him or not, he wanted to hear all perspectives. And ultimately, you knew at the end he had reasoning behind every decision he came to as to why a play was in the playbook that week. And the style of play that the game needed to have was the one that had the highest chance of winning. This is why some weeks he is ground heavy and some weeks he is pass heavy. And they'll do whatever it takes to win. Sometimes installed plays, writes Benkert, were his own. Sometimes they were someone else's. And sometimes they were taken and tweaked from another team. It didn't matter to Shanny where they came from, just mattered if he thought it would work. He can flip the switch from being a dude to a coach like the best of them. I wasn't expecting to see that dude in him, but it was cool as a surprise. There's no wonder why his guys play so hard week in and week out for him. The film shows that on both sides of the ball. Also, when he's being Coach Shanahan and not Kyle, you can nearly leave your blind faith in him that he's done all the work to get the plan ready. And now, as a player, it's on you to do your part to play into the plan. It was so cool to see that permeate through the locker room while I was there. There's more than that, but all in all, there's no surprise on how they are run from the inside and why their sustained success looks the way they do. Everyone there plays their part and trusts each other to do theirs as well.
It's why they've been able to plug and play different pieces, navigate injuries and everything in between over the last few years, and continually be in Super Bowl contention. This year, they just so happen to have the best pieces to date and be the healthiest they've been so far. Very much a stars aligning for good dudes playing hard for one another in a system with a great coach and a GM combo. I would argue that they've had a lot of guys healthy, but they've lost Bosa. Their wide receiver room has been decimated, and they lost their quarterback. So I don't know what Kurt's saying about the most healthy, but yeah. Oh, by the way, I'm reading this from 2023. Son of a bitch. Why did that pop up on my timeline? Just read the whole thing. Okay, it applies today. It applies today. I guess Kurt must have retweeted his own thing from 2023. But yeah, I would agree with all that, and I initially was not a Kyle Shanahan guy. Dak Prescott is balling. He's now thrown at least three touchdowns without a pick in four consecutive games. Other quarterbacks to do that include Russell Wilson, 2015, Drew Brees in 2019, Aaron Rodgers in 2014, Peyton Manning in 13 and in 14, and Tom Brady in 2007. Rex Ryan on ESPN is a clown. I think everyone knows that. He's a well-paid clown. Also a guy who likes sucking on women's feet. Guess what he doesn't like? Jordan Love. Why? Oh, I don't know. Reasons. He can't trust
him. But Jordan Love, man, I got no love for Jordan Love, and you know I've never have. And why? Yes, he's got unbelievable ability, and we'll see some amazing plays from him. But at the end of the day, do I trust Jordan Love? No, I don't, because I think he's going to take – and he doesn't do it. Statistically, he says, oh, no, he doesn't turn the ball over. Oh, yes, he does. The biggest moments, he'll turn it over.
Oh, yeah, Willio. Oh, yeah, look at me. I'm Rex Ryan. Doop. And that's what ESPN thinks is good commentary. Somebody made a point the Vikings need to get more shit about their quarterback situation. They botched it completely because they let Darnold walk. Danny Dimes was in the building. He's playing amazing for the Colts. And now you've got McCarthy with this lingering ankle injury that guys like Adam Schefter are covering for McCarthy and his agent on. More on that in a second. Wentz is wincing all over himself. And don't forget, they said, yeah, we don't want Aaron Rodgers. It'll be too much of a distraction. He's too much of a weirdo. Rodgers and McCarthy's system with their wide receivers, oh my goodness, what that could be. Speaking of Rodgers, Steelers versus Packers Sunday night. It's going to be one of the most anticipated, highly rated games of the year. I was going to go to that game with some listeners before, well, you know, something happened.
What happened?
Let's not talk about it. Anyhow, the Steelers are going to be wearing their alt faux back uniforms. What's a faux back uniform? Well, it's like a throwback, but it's not authentic. It doesn't try to emulate the exact colors, look, stitching, and more of a historic uniform. Of course, the further back you go, you really can't even get close because they weren't even wearing helmets back in the 30s. These uniforms the Steelers will wear are going to honor the franchise's origins from their inaugural 1933 season, when the team was known as the Pittsburgh Pirates. Yes! And they'll incorporate homages to the city's heritage. The updated design draws from the 30s, but also the 60s era, while modernizing elements like the helmet. The Steelers last wore a version of these 33 throwbacks in 1994 for the NFL's 75th anniversary season, but this iteration includes the new gold helmets for a fresher look. Fan reactions have been mixed, with some praising the historical nod and others calling it unconventional compared to classics like the Bumblebee uniforms or the 70s throwbacks with the different numbers. I would agree. They really should just have the classic standard current uniform. I'm going to get my mom on because when she was over for dinner last night for her birthday, she wouldn't stop about, I'm so tired of all these uniforms. I watch these games. I don't even know who's playing. And my mom knows ball. She knows the NFL. She probably turned on the Charger Indy game and saw the Chargers banana uniforms. Yellow on yellow. Blah. Did not look good. The bigger problem with the Steelers, though, is the defense. The defense. The defense was so horrendous on Thursday night. While we were taping, you were looking live, didn't get to talk about it. They let the Bengals and Joe Flacco just go right down the field for the game-winning field goal. The Rams, by the way, have the second cheapest defense in football by payroll, and they almost threw a shutout against the Jaguars in London. Dominated. Somebody pointed out that pitching a shutout against the Jaguars, almost. I can't remember the last time the Steelers did something close to that, and their defense makes triple the amount the Rams do. Don't tell me it's not a coaching problem, says this guy on Twitter. It's always been a coaching problem. Adam Schefter is a joke. I told you this. I have no personal thing against Schefter, just his existence, his salary is absurd, and the way he will shill and cover and outright lie about some things so he can protect his sources, which are agents, is ridiculous. Schefter tweeted that J.J. McCarthy's week 2 high ankle sprain was expected to be a 6-week injury. Nothing has changed. It still looks like a 6-week injury, which means McCarthy would miss next week and possibly be able to return week 9 at Detroit.
Carson Wentz against his former Eagles team. Everybody wants to know when J.J. McCarthy will be back. The fact of the matter is, when he sprained his ankle in week 2, it was supposed to be a 6-week injury. That means it's unlikely he'll be back next week against the Chargers. They're hopeful he'll be back the week after at Detroit in week 8. In the interim, Carson Wentz continues to hold down the fort for the Minnesota Vikings.
So he got community noted with this tweet, Schefter, with his other tweet earlier saying, as reported by Schefter himself in his own post, the injury was expected to be a 2 to 4 week injury. I've never heard of a 7-week ankle injury that did not involve a fractured ankle. Never. Not once. Especially for a position like quarterback where you can tape it up and still move around, albeit, say, at 90%. I mean, 7 weeks is crazy. Everyone knows they don't trust McCarthy. They put all their stock. They put all this. They let Darnold and Jones and said no to Rodgers because they believed in J.J. McCarthy. And they're afraid to bring him back. But Adam Schefter, it's a joke. Okay, way to lie about what you said the injury was earlier just to cover and shill for the agent and the player. Right now, the Colts offense is running so efficiently, and it's electric to watch. And Jonathan Taylor is amazing if you're not watching what he's doing in Indy. But right now, their efficiency rate, according to the advanced numbers nerds, is 82.7% of DSC lowercase v percentage. I don't know what that means, but the nerds do. Ask them. That is better than the 2007 Patriots, whose offense was a fucking blowtorch at 81.5%. The Chiefs in 2018 are third. The Packers' 2020 offense is fourth. The Lions last year was fifth. And the Saints in 2018 was sixth. The Colts are absolutely cooking right now. And speaking of uniforms, they've got it right. Simple, elegant, crisp, clean, beautiful, blue, and white with good, solid, bulky numbers. None of it. They do, I know, they've got a midnight edition for the Colts. I hate it. But most weeks, I look at those uniforms and I say, damn, those are clean right there. NFL Red Zone getting worse quickly. Pro Football Talk. And Michael David Smith writes, when the NFL decided to add commercials to Red Zone, which had long been advertised as 7 hours of commercial-free football, the spin from the league was that, don't worry, these commercials would no big deal. Just four 15-second ads during the whole 7 hours. You'd be lucky to even see one, was the spin from the league. Well, Michael David Smith reports that didn't last long. The NFL has now increased the number of commercials on Red Zone, making the subscription service a worse product for the paying customers, but certainly more lucrative for the NFL and the billionaire owners who are delighted to find new ways to squeeze money out of the fans. Commercials were noticeably more frequent on today's Red Zone channel, as the NFL had taken a product that fans could once turn to and enjoy nothing but football all day Sunday and instead turned it into a product that is, well, riddled with commercials, much like the rest of the NFL TV product. What the NFL has done to Red Zone is fundamentally different than the commercials during a regular game. Football fans are accustomed to commercials after scores and changes of possession, and fans can accept that those breaks are simply part of the game. Red Zone was always, always billed as something different, billed as something commercial-free, something hardcore fans would be willing to pay a premium for, because it's nothing but football. Now it's not. Now it's football and commercials, writes Smith. With the number of commercials only increasing and the football therefore decreasing, it may mean more money for the NFL, but it's a raw deal for the fans who subscribe to the Red Zone. Well, you know what I've said about this, and I'll say it again.
I am altering the deal. Pray I don't alter it any further.
Pray I don't alter it any further. Of more outrage, more and more people are reaching out to me saying, Zabe, you're right about the fact that they don't even, Scott Hansen doesn't even set up the how and the why as to where they're going to a certain game. They have no feel for, hey, this game is coming down to it, and it's important. And even though there is a stoppage in play where they're sorting out the spot of the ball or maybe thinking about a penalty, whether it's going to be assessed or not, don't go away from that game just because a team that is down 15 is in the Red Zone. Yeah, it's a mess. But it was always, I think, a bit overcooked, because if you're not watching the whole game, you're not getting a full sense of how the game is flowing, what the key plays really are, why a certain team is or is not ready to win the game. I have a love-hate with Red Zone. I'll watch it. I was watching it on the golf course on Sunday. It was convenient to have, but it's no substitute for actually watching the games. That is going to be it for me today. Look at the time. Boy, it has flown. That's a good 43 minutes from yours truly. I hope you appreciated today's Zabecast. If you realize that this is all I'm doing right now for the time being, as I'm between broadcast gigs, and you want to subscribe, I appreciate it very much. Every bit helps. I'm not going to be on the soup line anytime soon, knock on wood. But hey, for those of you who say, you know what, I got you, Zabe. I've been a listener of the Zabecast. I don't subscribe because, you know, that's just my policy. But if you want to chuck me $5 a month for the next, let's say, 6 months, a good little bridge to get me through, and I'll just give you a virtual wink about the 6 months. This song is called This Town by OAR, Pride of Rockville, Maryland, formed in 1996, went to Wooten High, which is where Scott Lynn's kids went, where Andy Poland's kids went to high school. OAR stands for Of a Revolution. Mark Roberge, Chris Koulos, Richard Aun, Benj Gershman, Jerry DePizzo, your band. I do like this tune. My boy Luddy turned me on to this song because he would use it as a bump out. And I'm like, it is a good bump out. It's hopeful, it's optimistic, it's celebratory, it's upbeat. This town, this night, this crowd, come on, put them up and let me hear it loud. This town, this city, this crowd, stand up on your feet, put your worry down, and everyone all around, come on, y'all, let's take this town, let's take this town. In 2025, the band released a song for the Nationals called, in their City Connect jerseys, called Our Diamond, Our District. OAR with this town. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.